Okay, so we're back for part B, which I hope is going to prove to answer some more questions that you've been sending in. So Peter went on to say that if you have the dilemma is if the advanced decline line is going to be strong, why aren't you bullish? Well, what happened, to give you an explanation, is that if you look at in 07, what happened is the S&P made up a double top, which is basically would be a bearish formation because you think the cycle has turned down, and a double top is considered to be a reversal pattern, a potential reversal pattern. I said, but the advanced decline line went all the way up to new highs. In fact, the advanced decline line came up all the way during the, not all the way, but through the second half of the bear market going into the, from the 2000 to 02, to late 02 low. And I said, well, it's one of those funny things is that I have developed a theory, which I haven't had a chance to explain at my in the T-Theory tutorials, which I'm rewriting for the text version. And what happens is that you can tell you're in trouble when the advanced decline line makes a localized high that is higher than it's ever been over the last 10 years at a projected top, because you can't make another T until you go for a long period of time. Or you do something else, and you sort of have to start over from this peak. And it turns out if the peak in prices is unfavorable, either from the 40-year cycle standpoint or the price-earnings ratio is real high, you get into a lot of trouble on that time. And that's how you can tell out that the market's going to have something that would be a crash or bottoms out. You can see that coming for the 87 crash. You can see the 2000 peak. You can see that is the problem developing going into 2000. And you can see that's the problem going into 07. And I said the very fact that the advanced decline line is strong here, as far as this advanced decline ratio, is telling you that when you finish this rally phase, there isn't any convenient way to make a new advanced decline T until you go into a rather long correction period. And I said that that's what's going to happen when you get down there. So it's best not to doubt the fact that the advanced decline line is doing strong here, because it's what it's doing is boxing the T-theory forecast into a place where you can't get out of a problem. You're basically oversold. I said the odd thing about that is that coincidental with the fact that this advanced decline line is making a relatively all-time new high and therefore is likely to be a serious peak, is the fact that, which is most common for major tops, is a sign of speculation. And I said, so far we haven't found any sign of speculation. Well, it depends what you call speculation. But it says, by my reckoning, August of 2010 is a peak. The regular advanced cumulative advanced decline line will make an all-time new high. It will be interpreted as negative. But the other conclusion you get when you look at history is there has to be a speculation going into that peak. Now, Peter's not kind of a person that's speculative. And most of us aren't. But in the bond program, which I discussed, which is conservative, we always leave like 20% of the money to find out what things might be speculative or what would be a good thing for a small amount of money. So anyway, I said, if you carry out the implications of the fact that the advanced decline line is acting unusually strong, it probably means you're going to make some kind of a top in August, and if it has to be an important top, there has to be speculation there. So I said, we cover that. Now, if you're interested in that, we cover that by doing what we call benchmarking, which if you go to the amshare.com link, which is by the business site, you get examples of that. And so far what you see is that the places that you get a chance to make speculation is in technology and in the overseas markets, emerging markets or developing markets, and those come to mind right away. But what we do is you just keep tracking them to try and find out what it is, because in the event you're going to make a major top, you're going to go speculative, and so you probably, if you're going to put something into equities, it should be into the things that look like they have their speculation, but it shouldn't be too much and so forth. That's how you get around to that. That didn't help him any, but that's what I would say about as far as answering the question if this is odd behavior that in order to get a speculative top and a major top from the advanced client teas to come out with an important top, usually you have to have speculation along with the strength in the advanced decline line. Well, it looks like the advanced decline line is strong, and it looks like the whole deal is kind of working its way towards that way. So, you know, next time we find a low, I think it probably is a good idea if somebody was looking around for something to buy. I'd make sure. So the question comes up, should I short this top? Generally, it's not a bad idea. It's a bad idea to top short the top because you get into a problem with the fact that there's always a backup of residual stuff. Then the whole thing looks bad, and then it starts to make a bottom, then it turns up. So the best thing to do is just to take a break, which what I recommend is you take a break, get away from the stuff that you've got, and then you watch the thing go through the topping portion and come down, which is almost always at the green envelope area. And what you do is you basically just keep looking for the whole idea that there's some kind, you know, if it looks like the advanced decline line is strong, and you say, well, the advanced decline line is going to go to new highs, and it's going to cause speculation, then the answer is, you know, what are they going to speculate in? So you have to go through whatever way you want to do this. You have to go through the whole concept of there has to be a rationalization for the whole speculation. Now, I happen to be a Mac user, and of course, if you look at Apple Computer, you can see there's one that is in the stock area that is sort of like it's become their favorite, and they think, you know, it's got the iPhone income is great and all that stuff. But there's other things that will attract people's attention, and what they think they're going to think is that they found the new thing that's going to produce a rally that never ends. Okay, well, they all end, but what you got to do is you got to go through and work out all the best ideas that you can find for whatever the people is going to capture their fancy. And so I would say that rather than being negative to the extent, what you want to do is go to a large cash position so you have all your options open. When you get to the bottom, try to figure out what the things are. And pick two that are different so that in case you strike out on one, you get the other one. Okay. So that's my theory on that one. That's not applicable to Peter's idea, but I did want to present the other idea of the best oscillator, which has to do with the filtering concept. In the regular PDF file, you see we have the envelopes with the S&P 500 rising up to, you know, in this bull market, it keeps getting up close to the red line, which is the upper envelope. And that's where you tend to look for the tops, okay? And then we haven't seen the S&P come down to the green envelope, which is symmetrically below the black line. However, in the development of bull markets, which is a separate study, you find out that the first one only comes back to the black line, and when you get two bullish runs together, you finally come down to the green line. So what you really want to do is, in the concept of the best oscillator, which is a filter, he's talking about filters to keep you from making mistakes. When you're rising up towards the right, if you want to calculate the risk to reward ratio, what you do is you take the distance, you take whatever the number is for the red line, and you take the number for the S&P target for the green line down below. In today's chart, the close is 1079 for the S&P 500. The upper envelope is 1121, which it hasn't been able to reach, which I doubt will reach. Okay, the lower envelope is 950. Okay, so what you do is you say, okay, today the risk-reward ratio is, we're at 1079. The best we can do is go up to 1121. So that's so many S&P points on the upside. But eventually we're going to go down to 950. So if you take the 1079, which we are now, and you say you're going to down to 950, you're going to lose so many points. So you take the points that you could go up to the red line, and the points that dropped you down to the green line, and that's basically what your risk reward ratio. So if you don't think of that, what'll happen is you get caught in the momentum trap, which is they say, oh, this market's really going low and it's going strong. But if you follow the if you follow the T's, you follow the envelopes back, which in about 3 weeks I'm going to have charts that go back for 25 years. You can follow this thing there. It's always true that the basic risk-reward ratio is how well can you, how much money can you make going up to the red line versus the eventuality that you're going to go down to the green line. And that's just the percentage distance you are in the channel. And you're going to see that every time you come up close to it, you should be a seller. And don't worry too much about the time estimate or the fact that people are trying to drum up interest in the stock market, because the media, all they're trying to do is get everybody to jump on the bandwagon, because they know that if the market's down, nobody reads their stuff and they don't get any people to buy their advertising, you know, come to their website, buy the advertising. But if it's real good, they'll come in and they'll get a lot of ad revenue, because the people will somehow check off the box for something to buy something that they don't really need. And so they're always trying to promote the rally as why there's some good things to do it. But if you remember that the best oscillator is the envelope, is the trading the envelopes, and you just make that little calculation of what's the, that the best you can do is go up to the red line, but eventually you're going to go down to the green line. If you see yourself hugging up in the top of the red line, you don't want to get into that unless you can figure out a way to bounce off the black line. Pretty close to the black line, which is the oscillate, which is the blue oscillator going down to the into an oversold condition. So I just want to pass along, in the context of a filter, that's the filter you put in front in T-theory, is where you are positioned in the envelope, whereas he's using another filter which is proprietary to him, and we won't stop like to ask him what the question is, okay, because somebody will set up a competing program. Say, I'm better than Peter Eliades. Okay, so you don't do that. Okay, so now let's go. Well, before we discharge this particular segment, I want to go into the best bond average. And somebody said that, you know, my grammar wasn't quite correct, and actually he was terrible in English class anyway. But this is going to be an example of what we call best bond strategy, but it should be called better bond strategy, because it only deals with two alternatives. But it's based on a study of a multi-bond strategy, and so it's the best of four different bonds, so it is proper to say that it is a best bond strategy. Okay, so let's go down and take a quick look at the chart, which is basically a spreadsheet. At the upper left, you have year total returns. Total return includes the price appreciation or depreciation, price gain or loss, plus the dividend returns. In case of the S&P 500, which is the first column, there's a price change in the index, and then there's a dividend, which is very low right now. And when you add the two in so that you get the total return, you see that 2000 was down minus 9.1%. You get 2001 was down minus 12.1%, and you go to 2002 is a bad year. 2003, you're up 28%, that's good. 2004, it's 10%. 5 is kind of a weak year, it's up 5%. 6 is 15%, 7 is 5%, 8 is minus 37%, and 09 is 10%. If you average the years, the 09 number is of September, at the end of September, so it's it's three quarters of 2009, but I didn't have room to print that in there. Okay, so you see what the average is. The average is basically, it's a 0.5%, but it's zero. Okay, so that's what the problem is. Okay, that can be interpreted as part of the T theory, the 40-year cycle, which I believe I'm the only person that's ever discovered this thing in the long-term 200-year chart. And so I asked Peter, I said, say, you know, you're talking about this now going down to 4,000. I said, that's fine. He says, yeah, I know about the 80 years, the 40 year and the 80 year cycle. And he says, I said, have you decided where the low is? I says, it's obvious to me that it's either in 2013 or 2014. Have you made a distinction? He says, no. He says, he's wondering about what's going on here. Okay. So I says, well, I've more or less decided that it's just the top in August, and you go down to the 13 and the 14. And I says, so the question comes up, what do you do? Well, I says, you know, I call this the best bond strategy, okay, because it's for certain reasons, which you don't need to know now. I said, but I do also have for the 2000 to the present, I have it for gold bullion too. And I said, it's sort of interesting when you put in that because I have a bullish forecast, but I keep finding out that the gold kind of goes up and down with the stock market. So I asked him about gold. He says, well, I thought it could go up to, I forget the number is, and you know it was a little bit above 1100. And he says that I think you have to come down. And I said, well, what I found out was that the gold goes with the stock market. So you know, generally it kind of goes with the stock market because if you look at the 07 top, this is what happens. It went down, but then when it went down because it was going up on the jewelry. India, you know, they drape their wives with these gold ingots in the form of jewelry because that's the only way they can buy gold. So there's a tendency for in good times for the people to buy the gold because they want the jewelry. But they get real serious, then these monetary people get oh, this would be a good idea to have some gold and stuff like that. And but what I noticed is that the problem is that when you get to a market peak, the gold goes down because you got to get rid of the people that are buying the jewelry. And then when you start things really start getting really serious about the you know that you could be in big trouble, the gold goes becomes attractive. Personally, I don't think I'd ever go for the gold in Tocqueville Gold is probably the best gold equity fund. And the GLD is the way you get to buy the ingots in a piece of paper, but they're supposed to have it in a vault. But you can also buy gold coins, which don't have a high premium, which is the Kruger Rands and the Eagles and stuff like that. And I said, but, you know, I would put that in there, but I like the name Best Bond because basically it's an income thing. Although I would think that I could probably put this in, but I have to find up another clever name for the program. So at some point I'm going to do it, but I don't have a forecast for gold. And you know, he sort of was going up there, but I think it just gets pulled back into the correction, and then when you get we get the correction for the low, it goes up into the you know, the recovery process is also in the gold. Primarily, it's a deflationary argument, so it's not inflation. Peter and I agree on that one. This is absolutely. I'll just digress for a moment. Is about his housing situation. You know, he used to live in Los Angeles, which is a hotbed of new ideas, technology, hotbed of technology, land of fruits and nuts, and so forth. So he went up to, he got north of San Francisco. And he bought it, which is, you know, that's sort of where the intellectual people live in California. Then, and he had a house up there, as I remember, if you recall. Then he decided that he was too far north and he wanted to come down to wine country. So I guess he's renting the house that he owns up there. But then when he came down to Petaluma, which is right in the wine country, you know, they all want to go out and live in wine country because they think that, you know, if they live healthy and all that other stuff, that they live healthy and have a wine diet, that they're never going to grow old. And then if there's you know, California's kind of going bankrupt, but if they have food riots and stuff like that, nobody goes out to wine country. And then there's also the earthquake problem, but you know, there's nothing to fall down in wine country because they just got the plants in there and so forth. So anyway, they all want to go into wine country, which is just a little bit further north, and mix with the intellectuals and so forth. And so so he did want to buy a house, though, to buy another piece of property, because he says, I keep telling people that we've gone through this massive real estate speculation, and I talked to some people that are smart, and they said, but there's a recovery going, so they're buying real estate. He says, no, anyway, there's little cycles where you go up, where you have these little dips and these little rallies. He says, but the big cycle is turning over. So for what you're going to gain on this recovery, they're going to kill you when you go down, and you won't end that cycle until you have all debt liquidation. And I said, right. I says, yeah, that's the 40-year cycle. And he says, yeah, so they got to have the cycle. And I says, Peter wasn't going to matter much because, you know, we're both in our 70s. And by the time they get rid of all these debt liquidations, we're going to be long gone. So, might be right to just rent the property in wine country and, you know, kind of let things settle out. But I would assume that, you know, maybe wants to do is sell the other house he owns when he sees the cycle go up or something like that, because we didn't get into that. But in any case, it is true. One thing about he does think clearly is that the next time you, when you go over this top, which we think is in 10, down, it has to be debt liquidation. It's the logical end to a product cycle. It is not inflationary, therefore it is not, people claim they're buying gold now for the coming inflation, but it's the coming depression that you want to, in the coming depression, you can't own the GLD contract, which is a piece of paper that says there's gold there. You have to actually own the gold. So you'll get too far into the gold business, okay? So anyway, going back to the table, which is what we call the best bonds, we have the S&P 500 has no particular redeeming value over the last 10 years, and presumably it has no redeeming value going ahead over the next, say, 3, 4, 5 years, because it's going to get worse, okay? So then you look at the U.S. long bond. That is a U.S. Treasury bond. That's basically the Vanguard U.S. Treasury bond. The average maturity is 20 years, and it's extremely volatile because you get multiplying effects on the longer the maturity, the more it goes up and down. And you can see the long bond has in 2000 is 19% for 2000, which the S&P 500 was down. And then, you know, it has this little string of strings of things, and you see that the average of the periods into September 31st, but including 2000 to September of 09, is 8.1%. Then you see Fidelity Capital Income, which is basically a junk bond, a well-managed junk bond fund, and you have in the year 2000 when the market went down, you see it was down 9.4%. And if you look at the average, it's the average of the years is 8.5%. And then you look at what we call best bond total return, which is the better of the 2 years. In other words, you retrospectively say, what would you want to own in 2000? Well, 19 is bigger than 9.4, so you take 19.4. 2000, the 4.3 is better than the minus 4.7, so you pick 4.3. And so it's a retrospective view. But you can tell, all you have to do is figure out, it turns out, all you have to do is figure out what the year is, whether it's going to be good or bad for the S&P 500, because the two bonds, the high-quality bond, low-yield bond, or the high-yield, low-quality bond, are mutually exclusive. If one does well, the other has to do badly, because basically the long-term bonds are defensive, and so people will go there if the market's down. But the Fidelity Capital Income has to go down because it acts like a common stock with a high income, but it acts like a common stock. So if you know what the blah blah, so all you do is you take the advanced decline T forecast, and you use it to tell you what the trade. So you can reuse the advanced decline T forecast, which you noticed is reliable over a long time period, and you just flick them back and forth. So right now, if you look at the, for 2009, the first three quarters, the first 3 months, three quarters of the year, you see that the bonds are down minus 9%. That's because everybody's worried about inflation, which doesn't exist, okay? Because you're going to go into a depression. But they don't want to buy it because they're all, because of the deficit. It's definitely true the deficit is going to expand. You know, it's expanding, and that so there's a supply-demand problem. On the other hand, if you look at the capital and income, you see it's up 57%. So you wouldn't believe that they can do that, but it's a compression problem. So then I told Peter, I said, okay. So what the average is, now you look at the best bond total return, and the average is 20%. So what you try to sell programs is always a 20%, because 20% compound growth rate is the magic number. That's what you have to show people. Okay, they don't care about 10% because that's a common stock equity program. All they'd like it in the bear market. That's okay. Okay, but in terms of over the market cycles, if you got to do is do 20%. When I started my management program, we were able to do that because we were using in a time when everybody thought that blue chips were good, we were going to secondary growth stocks, and you just have big numbers that could come out of that one because it had shifted over to. It was a high inflation area, and the smaller companies' growth bonds could overcome the inflation problem, whereas the big blue chips weren't able to get their prices up without getting into trouble with the government and so forth. So anyway, you're always trying to find out what's the gimmick. Okay, so that's the gimmick. So I told Peter, I said an interesting thing about the capital and income thing. I says is you can draw time symmetrical T's in it, and you can get the momentum peaks. Out of that, so if you go to my tutorials, it has a double bottom, but the double bottoms in the capital and income T are like the double bottoms in the advanced decline line. However, the T is much shorter in time span. You go back to the momentum peak and you go down to the double bottom, split the double bottom, and you come up. And what you do is you come up with a new date for a peak, which is the best that the best that the capital and income can do. It's kind of the end of the line for them performing substantially great. So I says, well, Peter, I haven't checked that out, but I says I believe it's in the early part of the new year. So I said, there's more potential left off, but at some point, based on that T, you're going to run into a problem, and then the market's going to start going sideways to the logical end date, which is supposed to be the 26th of August. So anyway, so I guess it was Don that sent me the thing on the new Bradley system, which Peter is aware of. It says that the top is in March, or the turning points are in March and in August. And I said, well, that's okay. So I said, well, the August one is my turning point, so I don't have a problem with that. I believe the March one is the construction that you do in the capital and income. But I says I haven't checked it out, so that's one of the things. As soon as we get some time, I'm gonna go calculate that one out there, and I believe that's probably if it shows up in that time period, generally in the latter part of the first quarter, I think that's probably going to say that Bradley turning point, which was vaguely told to me as being March, is a top also. So that's how we get rid of that problem. Okay, so let's see. And is there anything else that we have to worry about before I close this up? So in any case, that's generally what the solution is. The problem is the drawdown problem in all these schemes, and it doesn't make any difference what you can come up with your own scheme. But I do think it's significant that the two people that have been around for a long time don't want to deal with common stocks. It's the problem zones, except with the single exception that if the advanced decline line is strong, there has to be some group that's doing extremely well, and if there is going to be a new top in the advanced decline line, by the time you get into which is a long time away, you know, relatively speaking, what's going to happen is they're going to get tired of playing around with the blue chips, and they're going to start convincing themselves that everything is safe. They're going to end up going into some kind of a speculative mode, and if you want to spend time trying to research something, I wouldn't research the downside. I'd go research what are all the clever people going to come up with as a speculation, and then when you get down into this correction that we're going to have, go look that out. But always pick two in case one of them is wrong. In other words, if you want to speculate, don't put all your money in one thing you're going to speculate. Try to find two candidates and kind of split what money you have for speculation in that time period. Okay, so let's see. That's probably a good idea to cut this off here, and I'll be back shortly. And then we're going to get back into the PDF file and go dig out that stuff. Okay? Thank you.